You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, remember El Chupacabra? As far as we know, it's still out there because nobody has captured the beast. But you'll hear from a guy who tried. Plus, words of advice if your child is a star athlete, something else you can't bring on an airline anymore, and the 10 most painful places to get a tattoo. Joining us on the show is a man who, despite attempts by the authorities to wrestle it away, still has a driver's license, the man behind Gonzo.fm, our friend Gonzo, Greg Spillane.
Hey, Phil, thanks. I'm not sure if you've noticed or not, but living in the U.S. of A., it sure ain't what it used to be.
I noticed that. Hey, if you listen to this program on iTunes, thanks for leaving a comment and a five-star review. You're helping the show by doing that because the folks over at iTunes, they read your comments, they notice your five-star reviews. And don't forget, subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. All right, we'll get started. Greg, you've got some, you've piqued my interest. You start the show with America sucks, and all of a sudden everybody says, what are you talking about? You don't love it or leave it.
Yeah, right? I know. USA. Well, I hate to do this, but we have to start with the sad story of Hitchbot. Have you heard about Hitchbot?
Hitchbot?
Hitchbot.
First or last name?
That he's just Hitchbot, the 3-foot-tall hitchhiking robot.
Never heard of it.
He's kind of like, do you know about Flat Stanley?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay, so he's like a robot Flat Stanley.
That little character, little school kids asked me to take him to the hockey games and take a picture from the glass right there on the ice. And then
Right, it's so many. Yeah. How many places can Flat Stanley be photographed at, right?
Yeah, right.
Kind of like that.
So Hitchbot, you take it to the places and take a photo or what?
So, yeah, you're driving along the road, and on the side of the road, there's the Hitchbot. And he's wanting to get a ride to, in this case, he was trying to get to San Francisco. He's going across the United States. However, on the 1st of August in Philadelphia, he was decapitated and dismembered by an unknown assailant.
Wait a minute. How far had it gone prior to that without any incident?
Yeah, prior to that, Hitchbot successfully traveled more than 6,000 miles across Canada.
Yeah.
Took rides across Germany and the Netherlands without a problem.
Where people have respect for other people's junk.
Sure. His American journey started on the 16th of July. Yeah. He got through Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New York, and New Jersey without incident.
Yeah.
Actually, somebody even took him to Fenway Park, which was on his, because he has like a bucket list of things he wanted to do.
Sure.
So like if you were to pick him up, and I think he would tell you, because he talked, where he'd want to go and he wanted to see.
A talking hitchhiking robot.
Yeah, he had his brain was essentially a tablet computer.
Yeah.
So he was programmed to talk, and he would, with your permission, take a picture of where he was. And the only tracking device he had was just his GPS, so they could figure out where he was, essentially.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so Americans suck, don't they?
Well, I mean, that seems to be the takeaway, although the guys that did this thing kind of disagree. They say that the fact that he got as far as he did was actually a tribute to how most people are generally nice.
Yeah.
I think the takeaway is maybe hitchhiking is dangerous. I think that might be the larger thing.
Yeah, hitchhiking in Philly and some other big cities is probably dangerous. Doing a lot of things in Philly is probably dangerous.
Well,
like ordering a cheesesteak wrong.
Yes, and I've had that happen. So, be very careful how you order your cheesesteak.
Use that around from here or something. How do you speak Philly? I tried to speak Philly the other day. It's a thing where you kind of slur some of the letters together, right?
As long as you begin with yo, you're usually off to a good start.
Right. Just remember Rocky. That's Philly.
I moved from Los Angeles to Philadelphia, and I went to with the people who had hired me there. There's let's go get a cheesesteak on South Street.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was standing there waiting for help at the counter, and the guy's like, yo, hurry up. I don't get all day. I'm all used to Southern California. Like, hi, hey, have a nice day.
Yeah.
You know, very, very different attitude.
What goes in a cheesesteak sandwich?
Well, Philadelphia is known for a certain attitude. This is where sports fans, they go to the airport to boo bad landings. That's seriously something that you can do.
Yeah. Now, here in California, things are quite a bit different. In fact, things are going to hell, aren't they? I mean, it's hot as hell in some places, but it's even hotter than that up in Northern California right now.
Well, yeah, it's the annual Festival of Fire in California. That's what you do in the summer. Let's set the state on fire.
Sure.
Currently, 27 large, uncontained, and active fires happening right now. That means 14,000 federal and state personnel are on the job trying to get the fires out, which means, you know, the president has to be on top of this because it's, well, a large expenditure. The number of homes being threatened by unpredictable wildfires right now in Northern California, up to 6,900 at last check. But that was this morning, so that's probably even higher by now. So, yeah, it's a particularly exciting fire season for California this year.
No declaration of emergency yet from the governor?
I imagine we will probably hear that soon, would think.
Yeah, because, it's not cheap to fight fires.
Sure. And
more safe.
And I imagine, of course, they say the cause is still under investigation. We hope that it's lightning and not some, jackass lighting a campfire or throwing a cigarette butt out the window or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
But I'm sure, given the drought, probably has something to add to the whole situation to make it that much more fun and exciting.
Yeah. All right. Well, good. Let's fight those fires and congratulations to the folks who go up there and risk their lives to put those fires out. And not just firefighters in the general vicinity, but those who fly in from other states.
Sure. Yeah.
And in some cases give their life trying to fight these fires. So, wow, just a bunch of brave men and women who fight those fires. Now, talk about the antithesis of brave. Somebody who stalks an animal who is tagged and in a preserve and watched and expected to live a long and healthy life. Talking about Cecil the lion, this was the big news last week, and it continues to be big news because Dr. Toothy Finkelstein, what's his name?
McFergenergen? He's from Minnesota there, so he must be like McFergenergen.
The dentist who went out there and bagged a protected lion, a beloved lion, and now he's a hunted man in many respects, but there's all kinds of backlash that is affecting people that would never even consider picking up a rifle and shooting at wildlife. And what's the latest thing here, the latest blowback?
Well, sure. Yeah, the ripple effects from this story are kind of astounding to see how, the fingers from this thing reach out and affect all sorts of things to people's idiot behavior on, Twitter and social media going, hey, here's this guy's address, go, hassle him and stuff like that.
Right.
So that whole mob mentality broke out over there. But one thing I think that we see that might be good here is that I think it's Delta Airlines and several of the other major U.S. carriers that offer direct service to South Africa. In fact, I believe Delta is the only one that offers direct service to South Africa. And they have said that if you are to go to South Africa and do big game hunting, you're not going to be able to ship your animal head, your trophy head, back via freight on their airline. They simply won't allow it.
Is that what they call those, trophy head?
I guess. Well, I mean, trophy animals. I guess you can bring the whole animal back if you want, like a rug.
Yeah.
If you want to make your lion endangered species into a rug in your house or whatever, put its head up on the wall.
Yeah.
But, they will no longer ship those via freight, which maybe will have some small effect to deter people from wanting to go there to kill the endangered species. I'm not sure. I'm not a hunter. I don't understand the mentality. I know my grandfather used to hunt, deer and stuff like that, and there were deer heads on the wall in his in his den, and it freaked the hell out of me. There's dead animal heads in the office. It's like the creepiest room in the house. I'm like, I am never, ever. I'd stay at Grandpa's house, for the weekend. I'm not sleeping in there. There's no way I'm sleeping in that room.
Oh, my gosh.
That Bambi's head is up there on the wall. That's just not right.
Now, Greg, we heard the other day that Hollywood's making a movie about emojis. They've made movies about Legos and Transformers, Battleship, Super Mario Brothers, and just about every kind of game. I mean, when are they going to make a game about Operation or Twister? Has there been a Twister movie yet?
I don't know. A Twister movie could be pretty. Yeah. It might be R-rated, but it'd be
Could be fun. Yeah.
Frisco Twister. I would watch that.
The season's date movie. That would just be what it would. Yeah. We'll have to ask.
I think the Operation movie would be pretty good. That could be a horror freakout kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so. Barrel of Monkeys.
Barrel of Monkeys.
Oh, they had that in Jumanji, didn't they?
Did, oh, I think they did.
Didn't a barrel of monkeys break out in that
movie?
I
think you might be right. Yep, that's true.
Well, Hollywood's making an animated movie about something that is very near and dear to many of us. And I'll tell you what that is next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. A little later in the program, how much would you pay if your pet got sick? Or would you pay anything? And also, a guy that hunts monsters. Not a monster who hunts poor defenseless animals, but a guy going after, you know, monsters. It's stuff that's going to attack you. Scary stuff. Things that
like
go bump in the night.
The things from the wild things, having a wild rumpus.
Exactly. He
we
goes
can't
after
have those
them.
Wandering around all over the place. You got to have somebody round those things up.
Right. Yeah. All right. By the way, Hollywood, you know, they're always looking for the new topic to come up with a movie and to make some big bucks in a hurry. Movies based on toys and games can be hit or miss. We mentioned before the break the Lego movie, Transformers. Those two went huge, bonkers.
Yeah,
bonkers,
Lego did. Yeah, Lego did really well, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, then there was the Super Mario Brothers movie, didn't do so well. And then, Rihanna was robbed by the Academy. She deserved some kind of citation for her superb acting in the movie Battleship. But that movie didn't do so well. But here's something new. There's an animated movie in the works about Pez dispensers.
That's outstanding.
It'll feature, quote, a world unique to Pez and a story that will touch the hearts of many.
I'm sure.
Now, it's very early in development, so there aren't any other details other than a bunch of guys on the crew at the craft services table downing candy out of a dispenser. Now, Pez dispensers, a little history for you, were created 88 years ago in Austria. Did you know that?
I did not.
By Franz Pez. No, that wasn't his name. But anyway, they're available worldwide.
See, I totally bought that.
Didn't
I was
you?
Like, well,
yeah.
Of course. It was Franz Pez.
They're available all over the world in 80 countries. Pez candies are primarily made of sugar, and the company says over 3 billion are eaten every year in the U.S. alone.
This idea of a Pez movie sounds absolutely stupid right now, right? Don't we like that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, storyline wise.
Sure, didn't we? But we probably said that when we heard about the Lego movie for the first time.
Of course. Yeah. Well, see, here's the logic behind it. I mean, look how many Legos are sold each year in the U.S. And I just told you how many billion Pez candies are eaten in the U.S. each year. So that means Pez touches the very essence of what it means to be an American. So it's
okay.
It's a true American movie.
You say
by
so.
The way, something else that's truly American is the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service. They require.
Please tell me they're not making a movie about that.
No,
that's really something that no one. That's probably not a box office guarantee.
How about an animated feature, a cartoon about IRS? Wouldn't that be good?
Wacky cartoon.
The revenuers require you to pay taxes on money that you get illegally. Did you know this?
I think I kind of did know this.
If you rob a bank, sell drugs, commit credit card fraud or anything else and get caught, you could get audited if you haven't paid up on the revenues from your ill-gotten deeds there.
Yeah, you got to report all income, report all income.
Yeah.
There was just a news item that I don't have in front of me, but there was a police department, I believe, somewhere that was saying, hey, if you're a drug dealer and your competition is, you know, dealing more drugs than you are, you can come in and turn them in, and we'll go bust them.
Yeah.
And, of course, the plan being that they would bust both of them.
But, right.
Clearly, sometimes government not clear on how people who deal outside the lines tend to deal with, you know, officialness.
Talking about busted, Donald Trump recently was given out the phone number of some Washington official.
I love this. Yeah, remember it was, like a month ago he gave out his GOP rival, Senator Lindsey Graham's phone number. And I think his quote was something like, in the spirit of open, fair political debate, you should be able to just call him up and ask him stuff or whatever. The website Gawker decided, well, and if I may quote their website right here, since Trump and his considered political judgment has decided that opening up direct personal channel of communication between his supporters and his primary opponents is a noble campaign tactic, we think it's only fair and right that the Republican primary voters be able to reach out to Trump directly himself. So if you'd like to call Donald Trump, the number is 917-756-8000. From most recent reports, it's going directly to voicemail, although there was word that there might have been an assistant trying to answer some of the calls once in a while. But
something tells me Donald Trump doesn't answer his own phone anyway.
Yeah, the voicemail is full. So the Trump campaign downplayed the whole thing. They said, oh, that's an old number.
Yeah.
It's, you know, blah, 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 blah. But what's crazy is, have you seen the latest poll?
Oh, yeah, he's doing well.
26% in the latest poll on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Jeb Bush is behind him with 12%.
Did the Republicans have their little shindig, their 10-man debate, or is that this coming week? It's this Thursday,
isn't
it? I think
that's in the planning, and the combatants, as it were, are still yet to be announced, at least about the time we got on
there. Well, Trump's the leader, so he and Jeb, if Jeb's in second place, those two will be there, and then there'll be eight more spots.
Right. So the rest of them have to arm wrestle for it, I guess.
Right, because there are about 35 Republican hopefuls. And Will Smith and Jada Pinkett, by the way, are not two of them. However, there have been all kinds of rumors out there that said that the two are getting a divorce. And that would be tragic because they are the first family of Hollywood, aren't they, Will and Jada?
I don't know. Their kids just drive me crazy.
Yeah.
All the stupid stuff they put on social media just wants me to.
Yeah, and their kids. They're, you know, you want to believe that their kids are talented.
Yeah. There's an extra question mark at the end of that, but yeah.
Yeah. So anyway.
We haven't really seen that yet, but yeah.
Here's the quote from Will. Under normal circumstances, I don't usually respond to foolishness because it's contagious, but so many people have extended me their deepest condolences that I figured, what the hell, I can be foolish too. So in the interest of redundant, repetitious, over and over again-ness, Jada and I are not getting a divorce. I promise you all, if I ever decide to divorce my queen, I swear I'll tell you myself. And let's see, on Twitter, hashtag dumb people should have to wear Scarlet D's. Jada tweeted, my king has spoken. And Will and Jada have been married since 1997, which is an anomaly in Hollywood.
What
isn't
a
it?
Wacky world that must be to live in, though, where you have to, you know, come out and publicly state, we're not really planning on the divorce, not yet, anyway.
Right, because when you're a Hollywood type, you walk out the door, there's a whole bunch of people asking you questions and taking pictures.
Well, the one that made me sad was the one that was announced, I think it was yesterday, about Gwen Stefani and Gavin Rossdale. Announcing their divorce. They filed papers simultaneously, so apparently it's at least, you know, amicable as much as those things
can be.
That's
awful, but you think about it, they're both rock stars in their own right, and they don't tour together necessarily. They often have separate tours, and they're probably getting a little, backstage groupie.
According to those sources that TMZ talks to, that seems to be kind of the point of contention that there was a lot of touring, and she was mad that he was touring, and he was like, "Well, you tour too." Mm-hmm. But I think there was also suspicion of some infidelity on the part of Gavin's side of things.
Oh.
So it's I don't know. I was talking to a friend of mine about this. I'm like, I don't know. My first comment was, "Oh, nobody saw that coming."
Yeah.
But she was like, no, I thought they were going to make it. So
they have three kids, sons, Kingston, Zuma, and Apollo.
Okay, they do get a flag for dumb names. I'm sorry, but yeah.
Yeah.
Zuma, I could almost take Zuma. I'm like, okay, all right, Zuma's cool.
Yeah, but now Gavin, from another mother, has a 26-year-old daughter, a British model, Daisy Lowe.
Mm-hmm.
Although he didn't know it was his daughter until 2004.
Right. That's got to be a great phone call to get, huh?
Yeah.
Imagine getting that call.
Hello? Daddy!
Oh, hi.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe he got another phone call. Maybe that. Maybe we'll find out more.
Another example of how sick people can get, Greg.
Hmm?
Precautions were taken at Bobby Christina Brown's funeral this past Friday so nobody could take pictures of her in her casket and sell them to the media. Mm-hmm. Precautions were taken. However, it happened anyway. TMZ says a picture sold for more than $100,000, but they didn't say who bought it, which means that perhaps they bought it, but they didn't say. Not surprisingly, the Brown and Houston families are blaming each other. The Browns are reportedly worried about this because the same thing happened to Whitney Houston back in 2012. Meanwhile, Bobby Christina was laid to rest yesterday next to her mother at Fairview Cemetery in Westfield, New Jersey.
I saw that headline and I didn't, you know, I kind of really haven't followed this whole thing because it's just been so tragic and sad and there's just been so much awfulness that surrounded the whole thing.
But do you absolutely have to see a photo of a dead celebrity?
And well, if I did, would it matter? I mean, I'd be just like, that's sad.
And can
right?
can you bring that photo onto an airline?
I don't know. These are questions that only you would ask, Phil.
Right. All right. So your kid is an athlete. Let's assume your kid's an athlete. A pretty good one at that. Good enough to play on a local club team. Now, before you put all your eggs into one basket, we're going to explore all the reasons why playing for the high school team may be just as, if not more important for your child's development as a standout than club play. And that's coming up when we speak to an expert next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. All right, we're back. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. Welcome to it. Before the break, I referenced club teams for youth athletes, and just in case you're not familiar with that term, let's get the definition from our resident All-American sportsman, Gonzo Gregg.
Oh, that's right, Phil. I'm glad you brought this up, because I don't know if you remember, but back playing on the club team, instead of field hockey, they'd give you a large club, and then you would chase the opposing team around the field, beating them repeatedly over the head.
Yeah.
As part of the club
team. Greg,
no,
not quite.
No?
No. How about we get the definition from a real expert, huh? Dr. Richard Kang is the medical director of the Pediatric Intensive Care Unit at Dignity Health Northridge Hospital. That's in Northridge, California. And he joins us live. Doctor, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Now, let's be serious about this and use this for foundation for the discussion here. What is a club team, anyway?
Well, a club team would be something that's outside of your normal high school team, club team. You know, I guess in basketball you've heard of like AAU, in baseball there's those travel teams that are something outside of the traditional high school team that you play for.
Does your child have to be an elite player to get in, or is it more or less if you can afford the fees and your child can at least compete, you're in?
You know, it really probably depends on the age level. At the youth level, I think most children are encouraged, and like you said, that can pay the fee. As you get older, I think more of the elite athletes, there's tryouts, and you actually have to make the those club teams you get older.
You have to try out and make the grade. Yeah, gotcha.
Right.
All right, so now you want to talk about how important it is to keep your child in sports at his or her high school, correct?
Yeah, that's definitely something that I would encourage all students.
Now, not with if the kid is on or qualifies to be on a club team. So, would you do this at the same time?
You know, actually, without most kids that are in club sports also do play for their high school team. So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah, you could do it at the same time.
All right. So, it's focusing on the high school, because I think that's probably the level of competition that's more accessible to a larger number of people. Students, why is it important to keep your child in high school sports?
Well, I think the main thing is, you know, playing for your high school that represents a community. So you really get a sense of going out, representing your high school, you know, building rivalries against other schools. And that kind of stays with you as you get older, as you, you know, if you do continue sports into college and further on, that's sense of rivalry and representing your community is a really strong part of it.
Yeah, go school, alma mater, all of that sort of thing. Club teams don't have fight songs, right? But schools do. and you don't read a lot about club teams in the local newspaper, do you?
No, you know, it's funny because my children do play for club sports also, and it's really something you have to be almost part of that community. It's a separate community, and kind of in that sense, we kind of know the different club sports and teams that are out there.
It's really exciting when you get the local newspaper and there's a news clipping about your basketball or your baseball game, and boom, there's your name all of a sudden. Look, Mom, Dad, I'm in the newspaper.
Right.
And if you're lucky, they don't hit you with it.
Right. It's really a sense of achievement that you can see. You know, for parents, it's a nice way to kind of talk about your child, but for the child also, you get a sense of achievement seeing your name in the local newspaper.
Right, and it seems to me the nice thing about high school sports is they have the different levels of competition, the C's, the B's, JV's, varsity, and all of that, and so you have a process of development that is probably unique.
Right, and you know, you almost get a sense of the importance of being persistent, knowing that you have to really work at your sport or your art to really get to that level that you want to achieve. And that's where I think that's important. You kind of know where you are in standing and what you need to do to get to the next level.
Yeah, when you do get to that next level, there are students at the levels where you came from. And so do you develop a sense of mentorship or leadership along the way?
That's definitely, yeah, part of it also. And I think, you know, for every child, you know, their experience may be different, but I think when you experience that kind of mentorship as let's say a freshman, and as you get older and you gain all that experience, I think that is part of your development also into becoming a leader by the time you're a junior or senior and kind of mentoring the younger students as they come up.
Yeah. And, you know, I played basketball and volleyball in high school, and often your coach is also your driver's ed teacher, and that's a special experience, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, and depending on what school you go to also, you know, it may be someone from someone you know. It could be your next-door neighbor for all you know, but the coach is also very, very important because you do get to play for different types of coaches. Like you said, there's different levels, including JV all the way to varsity, and you kind of get to see what the different styles are and kind of prepares you as you get older, if you do continue, to kind of adapt to the kind of coaching styles and the mentorships you get from different coaches.
And it's good, too, I think, if you get a coach who's honest and says, you probably should stay in drama class. And just come to PE when you have to. Maybe the team's not for you.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and I think, yeah, that's probably an art also to try to kind of say that in a way that's not too, you know, discouraging or,
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I got plenty of discouraging coaching from my coach back on the basketball team. I'll paraphrase. What in the world are you doing out there? Well, that isn't how he said it, because back in those days, you could say things and people wouldn't run you out of town with pitchforks and torches.
Media and stuff, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, very good. It sounds great. And just to put parents at ease, the scouts for the minor leagues and for the big leagues, for that matter, and the colleges, they do come around to high schools and not just the club teams. Isn't that right?
Oh, yeah. And that's something important to remember. They do. I mean, there's really nowhere that scouts, you know, nowadays there's so many scouts from teams that they're at high school sports, club sports. I mean, they're probably anywhere. If your child is going to be noticed, he'll be noticed with, you know, anywhere he plays.
Yeah. And the other thing to consider is, and I don't know if this is the case, but if you don't play high school sports and you do play club sports, can you qualify for a college scholarship if you didn't play sports in high school? You don't know the answer to that question,
do
you?
I'm not sure, but
there, we stumped the expert. I love when that happens.
My best educated guess is you still would be eligible.
Okay, fine. Yeah. I was trying to make a better case for the high school thing, because come on.
Right.
Play for your high school. What's the matter with you? All right.
Well, I think most high school, you know, going through club sports, you know, you may come across different teammates and stuff, but going in the high school sports, you really grow up with the teammates that you start with. And I think that's something that you may not get in a club sport.
Gotcha. I have two more questions for you, Dr. Richard Kang. What was your sport in high school?
So I played baseball, and then towards the, you know, I got that nice encouragement to join track, because I was more of a speedster. So
yeah,
at the end of high school, I ended up on the track
team. I was on the track team, too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where they put you if you, you know, they can teach you how to run.
Guys who couldn't catch or hit, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And the other question is, tell me about what's special about the pediatric intensive care unit there at Dignity Health Northridge Hospital. Can't let you get away without telling us.
Oh, sure, of course. You know, now we're the only pediatric trauma center in the San Fernando Valley. So we see all types of pediatric illnesses, pretty much the sickest of sickest kids. Now that we become a pediatric trauma center in 2010, we are a major referral center for San Fernando Valley, Santa Clara Valley, all the way out to Simi Valley and Ventura County. So it's been a major development and a great boost to our community.
Yes, and just think, if you continued to play baseball and you followed that path, you may not have become a doctor to help all those children, and the world would not be a better place because of it.
That's one way to look at it, I guess.
Yeah. So good for you, and thank you so much for spending some time with us, and go team.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's right, go team.
All right, Dr. Richard Kang, again with he's the medical director, pediatric intensive care unit. Can you imagine that, Greg? I don't know if I can handle all the little kids coming in just with the serious things going on. But the doctor and his staff, they take care of that sort of thing every day of the week because somebody's got to take care of those kids, and I'm glad it's them.
Doing great work.
Yep. All right. Now, you want to do this or shall I? Okay, fine. I'll put on my best. I'll put on my best movie trailer voice.
Oh, good. Yeah, this is more you than me.
Yes. It's out. You ready?
World. No, you go.
It's out there. While you sleep, stalking your young, your farm animals, and penetrating your innermost fears.
What?
El Chupacabra.
Chupacabra!
You'll believe he's real. Next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Thanks for tuning in to Phil Hewlett and Friends at .com. You're at our website. Poke around a little bit. Go to the show fun page. There are some additions there today that are mind-boggling, as usual. Something else that is mind-boggling. Remember when mass hysteria broke out in Puerto Rico and Mexico, even parts of Texas, when people were finding cows and other livestock dead, their blood sucked right out of them?
Do I? That's why I moved to Detroit.
Of course it is.
But to get away from any chance of being near that madness.
No gruesome killing going on in Detroit, no.
No, it was much safer in Detroit.
But the only beast capable of this sort of killing was, of course, El Chupacabra.
Chupacabra.
Remember that? And joining us live is a guy you've seen on just about every TV channel talking about this disgusting mythical beast. Or is it real? Noted monster hunter Nick Redfern. Hello, Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. Even better that you're here now, sir. And so let's start here. What does El Chupacabra mean in Spanish?
Well, it actually means goat sucker, and it takes its name from the fact that when sightings of the Puerto Rican Chupacabra began back in the 1990s, it was chiefly goats that were attacked and allegedly drained of blood, and it then developed this sort of vampire-like reputation.
Ooh.
And so, you know, when I hear stories like this, I go and investigate, and that's what I do. I sort of go on expeditions to look for weird creatures like Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, and then write books about them. And, you know, and I've been to Puerto Rico quite a few times, perhaps 9 or 10 times over the last 10 years, trying to get to the bottom of the mystery. You know, is it real? Is it a myth? Is it something for the tourist industry even, you know, or is it a combination of all these things?
Right. We'll explore your belief system as it applies to these creatures in a bit. But I just want to get a little more of a refresher course on Chupacabra. You say there were sightings. Now, are you talking about sightings of the victims or sightings of the actual beast?
Well, actually, it was a bit of both. The whole thing began in the summer of 1995 when ranchers, you know, they'd wake up in the morning, they'd find literally dozens of animals dead and with puncture wounds on the neck and sometimes on the stomach as well, but done by something and in a fashion that they'd never seen before. And the local authorities said, well, it's got to be packs of wild dogs and things like that. And admittedly, there are a lot of packs of wild dogs running around Puerto Rico. But what was intriguing was that a few weeks later, people began to, you know, ranchers were staying up late. They were worried about their animals being attacked. So a number of them caught sight of these creatures sort of prowling around the property, getting ready to attack the farm animals. And they described them as being sort of walking on two legs with this row of vicious-looking spikes down its head and neck, almost like a punk rock mohawk or something like that, and vicious fangs and claws. And they described it as essentially looking like your worst nightmare possible. And that's when the term Chupacabra was essentially created by the local media, and the whole thing just erupted into hysteria all across the island.
Right. And we remember this hysteria. And what you describe, it does not sound like some punk kid, naturally.
No.
So it wasn't some kind of college or high school prank. As far as we know. So you took a trip to look for Chupi. Can I call him that?
Yeah, I'm sure he'd be quite happy about that, I guess.
Yeah, so tell us about your trip.
Well, yeah, first one I went on was in 2004. As I said, I've been there perhaps 8 or 9 times now. And what sort of really opened my eyes when I got there was the sheer fear that still existed in 2004 on the part of the locals. And I spoke to everybody from like ranchers, police officers, veterinarians. Many of them, I assume, were just going to say, well, this is just nonsense, you know. And what amazed me was that the local police on Puerto Rico, they had various people from the civil defense unit at the time, whose entire job was to go around and investigate these cases. And they brought out these files and records for me to have a look at, which had drawings and paintings by ranchers and people who'd viewed these things. And it was taken very seriously. And I spoke to veterinarians who said that, well, you know, we studied these bodies, and in some cases they felt that the blood had sunk to the lower levels of the animals when they were killed. But others said, well, you know, it does seem like there are significant amounts of blood missing. And so, you know, I sort of found myself plunged into like a really surreal world where that actually wasn't what I was expecting. I thought they were going to try and say, well, it's all nonsense, just go back home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, you know what? You talk about the fear that still existed nearly 10 years after the first incidents. But has there been any harm to humans? Has there been any face-to-face encounter?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I've actually spoken to probably 12, 15 people, something like that, who claim to have had sort of close encounters with these creatures where they've seen them at a distance of 12 to 15, 20 feet. And they describe them as being able to run on two limbs and four, not unlike a chimpanzee was how some of them described it. And they described the sort of the size of it and speed as similar to a chimpanzee. Now, I have admittedly heard a few stories where people said, well, you know, if you go to this little village, they know a story of somebody whose family had a member who was killed by the chupacabra. But I was never able to get beyond rumor mill, if you like. Those kind of stories always stayed at that level. But I spoke to some very credible people, including a police officer, actually, who said he swore he's one of these creatures bounding across the road. And he said it was like a hairless chimpanzee. Now, there shouldn't be anything like that on Puerto Rico, hairless or not, you know.
Right. Yeah. Well, now you've looked at this scientifically. So when you when people connect all the dots, the news coverage, the rumor mill, the hysteria, the legitimization indirectly by the police investigating every one of these cases, is it possible that this is all just a figment of everybody's overactive imagination?
Well, you know, I mean, you have to be balanced when you go out looking for Bigfoot and lake monsters. You know, you can't just sort of just go crazily running around like a headless chicken. So I always do try and remain balanced. And there's no doubt that experience has shown me that when you go to places where there are strange creature reports and things like this, it does whip up like a lot of friends in hysteria, and people see, you know, things in the shadows that aren't necessarily there, and people are running around with guns and almost blowing each other's heads off. You know?
Right, yeah.
You do get that, but I'm still sort of impressed by a core number of reports that I've got over the years that, to me, is suggestive of something strange going on.
How about you? What do you think about Chupacabra? Real?
Well, I think it's real, but I'm just not sure what it is. I mean, one of the interesting theories was the idea of like a kind of giant bat. Now, in prehistoric times, there were huge bats, Puerto Rico has large populations of bats. Granted, they're small ones, but they include vampire bats. So I sometimes wonder, what if Puerto Rico is home to like a huge monstrous bat, you know, with a wingspan of sort of 4 to 5 feet?
I'd say that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that would be cool to actually catch one of those things and say, you know, hey, the chupacabra may not be the chupacabra. It may actually be this huge monstrous bat that survived since prehistoric times.
Now, the greatest day in your life, in your wildest dreams, would be to come face to face with who? Chupacabra, Bigfoot, which creature?
And what are you going to say to Bigfoot when you meet him?
Well, after Angelina Jolie, you mean?
Right.
it would probably be something like the Loch Ness Monster. I think that's the thing that actually got me interested in the subject when I was a kid, when I went to Loch Ness with my parents for a day, and I was like, wow. So if I could, you know, be the guy who finally proves the Loch Ness Monsters actually exist, that would be a good day. You know?
Right, yes. Well, we're here to say today that there is no reason to panic because headless chickens are not running around.
Not yet, they're not.
Yes, exactly. Well, sir, a pleasure to speak with you, and good luck on your continued search for these mythical monsters, real or otherwise. And it's been a pleasure. Nick Redfern, thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, there he goes. Well, what do you think? Gonzo, the chupacabra, real or not?
I kind of want it to, even if it is a giant bat, I need chupacabra. I think we need chupacabra. We need Loch Ness Monster. We need Bigfoot.
Yes.
As part of our mythology, I think it's.
Because who knows? Maybe they're tasty.
Or maybe they think we're tasty. We should be careful.
Hey, that's it for hour one of the program. So much more to come, including how much money are you willing to pay to get treatment for your sick pet? Something else that'll cause you to go blind. And finally, a bed that will give you a good night's sleep and kick you out the door in the morning. Those stories and more in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Coming up next.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour is ugly grounds for divorce.
Yes.
Careful what you drink. You might go blind. And speaking of drinking, A woman offers her advice on how to live to the ripe old age of 110. Gonzo Greg Spillane is here with us today. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for tuning in. We'll get this hour started now. And you have a pet or two, Greg?
I don't.
You don't?
Have you ever? I have. I wouldn't say they were mine.
Oh, I see.
So we have pets now.
Yeah. Let's see. We've had a bird or two, and we have a dog, not by my choice. My oldest daughter, just one night about 9 years ago, just showed up at about 11 o'clock at night after spending about 5 or 6 hours getting up the courage to bring the dog home. And
right.
It was too late. She already spent the money from some
shifty
breeder in an alley somewhere who said, right. Hey, you kid, want to buy a dog?
Opens up his trench coat and goes, hey, how about a puppy? This puppy right here.
Yeah. So the deal was done. There was nothing we could do. And I said, no. And in the morning, you're taking this dog back to wherever you got it or to someplace else that will take it. And by then, the dog had already latched on, not literally, to my wife.
You mean crapping on the carpet?
No, emotionally. Oh. There was a connection between the dog and my wife, and by then, you know, at first she was on my team, the get-rid-of-the-dog team.
Right.
By morning, it only took about 10 hours. By morning, she was on the, maybe we should keep him team.
Oh, he's so cute. Look at how cute. Look at the cute face.
Yeah. The animals have powers on you. So anyway, that's the thing. I wasn't a dog guy, and so now I'm a dog guy.
Mm-hmm.
I feed the dog. I pick up its crap. I take it on a walk every now and then. I play with it, and some days I wish it was just gone.
Well, you have to admire the power of dogs in particular, but pets in general. They somehow coerce you into cleaning up their crap.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, most pets, in some form or way, even if you have fish, you have to clean the tank, right?
Look at them. Look at those eyes. Look.
Right. So somehow they coerce us, and they're just sitting there going, you're cleaning up my poo.
Yeah, it's all a big scam, isn't it?
It is. It's the animals win. It really is. But what happens is, and that's how they get you. So then if they get sick or something's wrong with them, people call them family members, right? Or some people call them my furry children.
Oh gosh, like, I wish Erin was here today. Erin she's got like 12 kids, seven of them are dogs and five are cats, and they're
any
all...
of them. And just off the wall question: any of them chickens by any chance?
No, I don't believe they would fit in her 200 square foot apartment. But
Yeah, so people, you know, we've all heard people go to extraordinary lengths. Like, if your dog got cancer, you'd be sad, but cancer treatment is expensive, right?
Holy cow. I mean, holy dog,
right.
Holy cat, whatever.
Right.
It's almost expensive as expensive as human treatment, isn't it?
So, yeah, if your pet got super sick, what would you do?
No, I mean, that's it. I'd go old Yeller on my dog, I think. There are things that are more important, and you got to, what's the point of destroying the family savings and your potential for living another day in a house with a roof over your head because your dog is sick?
Right. Yeah, you and I are on the same page. Like you said, if Erin was here, she'd be screaming right now, right? She'd
yes,
be
of
like,
course.
It's a member of the family. You do anything.
Take out a loan. Go on the street. Right. Sell the heroin. Whatever it takes. You know,
right.
As long as you can take care of your dog. I mean, I think not to imply that Erin is selling or taking heroin or doing anything on the street other than putting microphones and cameras in front of people's faces and delivering wonderful stories to the local TV news. But just the same, some people will just go to any length possible to save the animal. And I think they put themselves in jeopardy.
They do. I guess I don't know. We just don't get it. But this is why I bring this story today about this woman in Massachusetts who.
She doesn't have a chicken, does she?
There may be a chicken involved.
Oh, come on.
Because she specializes in chicken rehabilitation and rescue, which is apparently a thing that you can specialize in.
Buck, buck, buck! That's my pet chicken saying, what the?
She has a chicken that needs a prosthetic leg. The chicken...
Oh, no.
What's the chicken's name here? Hold on. I think it's Cicely. Cicely the chicken.
Yeah.
Was born with a damaged tendon in her leg, which makes it useless. So this woman...
Yeah. It depends what you define as useless.
Andrea Martin here is going to spend... $2,500 on a prosthetic leg for her chicken Sicily.
You know, and the irony of all of that is when they take off the bad leg, mm-hmm. and take the feathers off and batter it and fry it up, it's only worth $1.25.
I was going to say $2,500. You get a bucket of chicken legs for, what, $10, $15?
Well, if you have a coupon.
Sure, with a coupon, of course. Yeah.
It's like $8.99.
So there'll be a
couple
amputation
of sides
of the right leg of the chicken. I'm assuming that's the bad one because it would be, wouldn't it be sad if they did the wrong way? But a 10 to 14 day recovery period. And then a prosthetic chicken leg made on a 3D printer will be
Oh, really?
Fitted on.
Yeah. All right. Well, see, since they're using amazing new technology, maybe I'm down with the idea. But just the same, come on, people. All right, you're free to have your own priorities. Go ahead. Fine. Whatever.
With Sicily the chicken, we'll live to see another barb.
I only get 1.25 votes in my household, and the rest, I'm outnumbered. I'm sure that no matter what I feel about our dog, it's not my decision is not final.
See, you always get outvoted. That's the other thing. It's
now if it were a chicken, I might
have
to
put the family.
Yeah. If it were a chicken, I might have to put my foot down because I'm not eating my dog, but I will eat my chicken. If I had a chicken. All right. Do you get a good night's sleep there, Greg?
No, rarely. Oh. I'm really good at falling asleep.
Yeah.
But I tend to not stay asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's from years and years of waking up at stupid in the morning.
Well, this is how you manage and feed your psychosis, isn't it?
But I could have used this invention that I believe you're hinting at right here.
Oh.
Some guy has invented a thing. Well, because it's tough to wake up in the morning. Like, if I know it's the weekend, I can sleep in, like, amazing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not getting out of bed. And a lot of people have trouble with that. You know, they use alarm clocks or they have... Have you ever seen those alarm clocks that puts, like, a thing that vibrates your bed? You put it in bed with you so it, like, shakes you awake or whatever?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This guy has gone and invented what's essentially an ejector bed.
No.
It's an ejector bed. So, so the alarm goes off, basically, and I don't know if you have a certain amount of time or something, but it will literally catapult you. It has like hydraulic lifts that lift the bed up vertically and throw you onto your ass onto the floor to get you out of bed in the morning.
Great. That's awesome. You know, when you first said ejector bed, the first thought that came to mind is, you go to the bar, it's late, it's 2 a.m, you've had a little too much to drink, so has the young lady who decides to accompany you back to your place.
Or alleged lady.
Yes, alleged lady, to no doubt view your etchings. And so you wake up in the morning, hungover, headachy, and you look over, and on the other pillow, you think, oh my God.
I see what you're saying.
What
yes.
have I done? Press,
right?
Press the ejector button.
The oh, what have I done button.
Yes.
Right? This is so much better than having to gnaw your arm off.
I've spent the night with El Chupacabra.
So, yeah, you could, if you had like two separate sides, the ejector, make sure she's on the ejector side.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, if you wake up and you've realize you've made a poor decision.
Oh, yeah. Those folks over at the Sleep Number bed place,
right.
You know, where they talk about pressing the button when your mate is snoring. Now, if your mate is, fine,
sure.
call it your mate.
Right.
Only for a moment, but until you press the button.
What's your sleep number? It's get the F out. Boing. That's your sleep number. Your sleep number's 86.
Oh, God.
So the ejector bed, I think it has great potential for a various number of reasons.
By the way, we were mentioning hangovers there a moment ago. Greg, do you get a hangover here and there, don't you?
No, I'm immune at this point.
Are you? All right, fine. Yeah, you're just in a constant state of numbness.
Exactly.
Scientists have finally found a hangover cure that works. And you want to know what it is?
Does it involve Bloody Marys?
No.
Raw eggs?
No, not none of that.
Hair of the dog. I think the cure is more booze.
No. Not at all.
No?
No. I'll tell you what it is. Next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
Oh.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave
headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Now, if the solution to hangovers has been staring us in the face all these years, it's pretty irritating, isn't it?
Well, they have all those things at the liquor store now, you know, never hungover, and they have all those shots and stuff you're supposed to take or whatever.
Well, too bad for the liquor store. They're not going to sell them anymore. Some scientists in Australia say they finally figured out the best hangover cure. It's an Asian pear. The fruit, not a couple of people.
Oh, a pair of Asians.
No, an Asian pear. P-E-A-R, pear. They found people who ate a pear or drank pear juice before they got hammered had very mild hangovers, less memory loss, and less trouble concentrating.
Hmm. Can we make some sort of awesome cocktail with pear juice?
Why not? Let's start working on that. They also didn't mind bright light and loud noises like you normally do when you're hungover. If you had your pear first. Obviously, the catch is that pears only work if you have them before you drink. They won't help you once you've already had a hangover. Mm. The study only used Asian pears, so you may or may not be able to get those at your local grocery store. I think we've got plenty of those in my neighborhood.
They're the sexiest pears.
Exactly. Yeah. They're a little smaller, too. They haven't tested it with the green pears that are more common here that you see at your local not Asian grocery store.
Right.
But they're going to do that test just to confirm. So Asian pears, by the way, they look almost like apples, but they have very similar properties to the pears that we eat. So let's just assume that our pears work as well. So there you go. Down a couple of pears before you go to your before you get your drink on.
Yeah, that's pretty sexy. rolling into the club with a couple of pears in your pocket.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what was the new wave of heavy metal 1980s hair band album cover with the gal eating a pear? Was that Saxon? I'm thinking of an album
pear
cover.
Or another fruit.
It was like a forbidden fruit, but it looked like an Asian pear, and it was a little juicy too.
Oh, all right. Well, there was Little Feet had the album. Was it Eat a Peach? Was that them?
Oh, that was different.
how about peaches? Does eating peaches prevent the hangover?
No, but that's an activity that I'm sure you can explore and
usually
and tell scientists about it later.
Okay. I'm research, everybody.
We love it. And science is out there. I mean, what would scientists be if, what would they use up all their time with if they weren't doing ridiculous studies? And apparently, and you know the results of this, there's a study now that's figured out why are women always cold in the office?
Well, I'm sure, because it just arrived in my mailbox the other day, the latest issue of Nature Climate Change.
Of course.
The Journal of Climate Change.
Uh-huh.
They've actually done research, because if you've ever worked in an office building with women who complain in the summer about how cold it is, and you're walking around and you're like, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's 100 degrees outside.
Yeah.
In here, it's about 47, which is where it should be.
Yeah. Now my pits will air out, and the
right.
Those wet areas under my moobs will go away in a matter of moments.
Apparently, there is scientific reason for this. Now, you first go, if you work in an office where you have to wear a suit, it's probably because you're wearing a suit and she's wearing a sundress and a tank top, right?
Well, cut that out, ladies.
That might be part of it.
How are we supposed to get any work done?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there is research that suggests that it may because of what they call workplace temperature models, the ones that control the air conditioners in most office buildings are actually designed, they were probably designed by and therefore are good for guys.
Hmm.
The thermal comfort formula developed in the 1960s, targeted to suit a 40-year-old, 154-pound dude.
Yeah.
Now, women with different metabolic rates than most moob-bearing dudes,
yeah,
obviously are going to get a little chilly in that environment. Which, again, since this was designed by men, might have been part of the formula,
yeah,
to make the workplace chilly.
Mm-hmm.
But there is talk that by making this perhaps more likable to everyone, it could actually reduce greenhouse gases and global warming, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, what did we do without air conditioning anyway? Back in the, I mean, it hasn't been very long. I mean, really, post-World War II. When swamp coolers and all that, you know, the air conditioners that you stuck in the window and all that sort of thing became fairly commonplace. But we just lived without air conditioning, didn't we?
Well, sure. Yeah. Remember, I mean, when office buildings, you know, started not having windows that would open.
Right.
You know, like Mad Men era giant office buildings that were just glass and it was all about air conditioning. And
sure,
it's just been that way ever since. We don't think of it any other way anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other way to think about it, too, if guys were the ones that came up with this model for cooling up a room, and they were certainly aware that the ladies were coming into the office in sundresses and tank tops, and perhaps mm-hmm. those fit a little better when it's 58 degrees.
That was my point exactly when I designed the thermal temperature thing.
All right.
That was me.
Yeah, of course it was. Hey, during the Battle of Bunker Hill, remember that?
I do. I'm a Massachusetts native, so I was forced to know about that as a child. Yeah.
Revolutionary War, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know if you knew this, but you probably did if you studied it as a Massachusetts native. Most of the fighting did not take place on Bunker Hill. Did you know that?
No, it took place in bars because drunken massholes would get angry at each other and... That's where all the fighting took place.
Yeah, that's a mass. And it happened about 200 yards away on Breed's Hill. Not Bunker Hill, but Breed's Hill.
Huh.
But apparently.
But were they lost? They did not get to the map to where the, hey, we're having a battle.
Yeah.
It's going to be on Bunker Hill. And, of course, they came out of the bar all drunk and they went to the wrong hill.
Yeah, everybody was preparing for a fight on Bunker Hill. But they were preparing at Breed's Hill and they said, hey, what are you doing here? And they got mad. And they got in a fight. All right. A little later in the program, do you have an idea what which of your organs is the heaviest?
I have I'm sure it's wrong, but I have an idea.
Do you?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. But that's coming up a little later. I'm going to make you wait on that one. But what I want to know now is the secret to longevity. How could I live a long and fruitful and enjoyable life well into my early hundreds?
And see, this is the thing. They always tell you, eat healthy, exercise, you know, what else they tell you to do? Eat healthy and exercise, I guess, right? Basically the way they live a long, healthy life, right?
Yeah, clean living.
Agnes Fenton is 110 years old. Her birthday was on the 1st of August.
Oh.
Every day. For the last 70 years of her 110-year-old life, she's enjoyed 3 Miller High Lives and a shot of Johnny Walker.
Yeah.
Every day.
That's what I'm talking about.
See?
Now, that isn't enough alcohol to pickle a person, is it? Now, if she was having those all at one sitting, but it sounds to me like maybe she spreads them out over the day.
Maybe over the day, has three beers during the day and nightcap with a Johnny Walker, maybe?
Yeah, a beer with each meal.
Mm-hmm.
And a shot of the Johnny Walker at night.
Well, there's certain preservative quality. All I know from this is I am going to live forever.
But my
liver may not be here to participate, however. Yeah.
All right, fine. Okay, another question for you. Where's the most painful place to get a tattoo?
Probably on my heaviest organ. That was my guess.
All right.
There's
a tattoo artist in Cincinnati named Andy Eschenbach, and he works at a place called Flying Tiger, and he just listed the body parts where clients complain about the most pain.
Mm, okay. Do you have a tattoo? Do you have any ink?
I have none.
I
am uninked. How about you?
I have a few.
Yeah.
Wrists was pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Ankle was kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Back of the neck.
Mm-hmm.
So you want me to, like, most painful?
Yeah, most painful for you.
Apart from, like, down there.
Oh, yeah.
I would think that would be the most painful.
Well, here's what he reports from top to bottom. Head, face, Sternum.
Okay.
All right. Everybody find your sternum.
Sternum.
All right.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Hand, especially your palm. People are getting their palms tattooed. You know, I would get one of those fake electric deals, like when you shake somebody's hand and it shocks them. I'd get that tattooed on my palm.
Get a joy buzzer tattooed on your palm.
Yeah. Elbow is another, which is surprising because people don't feel much pain there. Rib cage and stomach, butt cheeks, because the padding apparently doesn't really help. Inner thigh and knee, ankle, and finally foot. And I think I would not be able to hold still for a foot tattoo. Too much of the tickling going on.
Well, I don't think we're talking bottom of the foot. I think we're talking top of the foot.
And what would be the point of that? You get the bottom of your feet tattooed red, and people think you have fancy shoes on.
Tattoo some flip-flops on there so you look really classy.
There you go. Hey, best and worst airports for your money. Our travel guy joins us next, about to fly to his favorite, perhaps best airport on the planet, next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. All right, thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. Gonzo Greg Spillane is here with me today. And it's time to talk a little travel and figure out which are the best and the worst airports for your money and your time. Somebody who should know better, and let's just assume he does, is our travel guy, Gary Warner. Hey, Gary.
It's always bad to assume. I mean, here I am in Long Beach waiting for the AAA truck to jumpstart my car so I can get out to the airport. So, you know, expertise is not always, you know, a brilliant thing.
Yeah.
Hey, the Long Beach airport is one of my favorite airports.
That's where I'm flying out of.
It's an awesome airport, isn't it?
Yeah, for size. I mean, obviously, the great thing about Long Beach is it's a small airport, but it's built up to a big capacity with JetBlue.
Yeah, and, Long Beach, California, as opposed to the other one on the, well, there's one up north and on the West Coast, and there's one on the East Coast.
Be careful, you'll end up in the wrong one and be really surprised.
Yeah.
This fits into the, you know, a little bit of what I'm talking about, which is that basically I'm willing to pay more money to fly JetBlue up to Portland today just to avoid going up to LAX.
Wow, really? And what's so bad about LAX?
Well, you know, I was thinking the other day that time rather than money is the real currency of travel. I mean, obviously money is very important, but that time is something that can get chewed up very easily in travel, and LAX is just a glutton for your time and for giving you a nice side helping attention.
True. There do seem to be a lot of tense people running around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And part of that is that it's, I think it's one of the worst airports in the country, particularly because of the status of Los Angeles. You expect Newark or Manila or you know, places like that to be lousy. There's airports like Chicago Midway and Dallas Love Field that are lousy, but they have a trade-off of being very close to the city. So you know, rather than going out to the Intercontinental.
Well, you know what I noticed, Gary, in my travels, and I compare it to LAX. When I go to LAX, there's nothing to see. It's just an airport. There's nothing. There's no visual memory to take away. Whereas opposed to some other airports in the States and around the world, for that matter, you remember visuals. There's an experience in the airport that's worth taking away.
Well, and that's a change, really. I'm old enough to remember. You probably are too, Phil. When you know, LAX was a very modern sort of Jetsons like space age airport with the theme building, which, you know, I call the Spider Building. And there used to be a restaurant up there, and it had a really cool look. Now, with the beginning of the end, to a degree, for me with LAX, was the 84 Olympics, where they built the second beltway around the terminals. There's the upstairs roadway. A lot of people don't remember when there was just one roadway.
Sure.
And they built, very necessary, a huge observation tower for the, you know, the flight control folks. And it really sort of de-themed the whole place. And then you have all the buildup around it, so that sort of the 1960s, 50s vibe, to get maybe out of Dodger Stadium, is disappeared underneath this layer of sort of modern banality.
Yeah, right. You can still kind of see it when you watch Airplane. It was, you know, when it was about Airplane era LAX was, I think, when it was at its best.
Yeah.
And a lot of directors still like to go back, like, you know, in the film Jackie Brown, they go down and they do that opening sequence down in one of those tunnels, and you used to take a tunnel out to the terminal.
Yeah.
Yep.
Go walk out. and there's all these little tiles that change color.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the opening sequence. So if you ever see the Tarantino film Jackie Brown, that's shot in LAX.
Yeah,
but
right.
That's so retro. I mean, it's like we're talking about the Marine Terminal at LaGuardia where they used to have seaplanes or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, this is a major world-class city with one of the worst airports.
All right, so we made the point. LAX doesn't work. Give us some give us some airports that do work.
Well, for me, San Francisco, well, first of all, where I'm going, Portland, I think one of the best airports in the world. And
really?
Consistently voted one of the best, the best airport in the United States. That's a combination of it's easy in, easy out, there's light rail that links you to downtown, there's great shopping, great eating, local places, not just, you know, the Hardee's or the, you know, McDonald's and the Starbucks. And it's laid out very well so that, you know, you can get from point A to point B. SFO is the same way, San Francisco International.
Oh, San Francisco with the BART. I mean, that is so simple. You just walk out with your baggage, you're on a BART, and you're off to wherever you're going to go.
Right. But they went out and they did that. They invested knowing that they were an important city, and they went through a lot of years of construction and hassles to turn that into a modern airport. It used to be much like LAX, and that LAX was built kind of like JFK in New York, the other one that really stands out. In an era when airlines would build their own terminals as these sort of expressions of their, you know, foreverness, and they wouldn't all link together because you wouldn't need to go to another one. Well, those days are gone since airline deregulation in 79. Airlines come, airlines go. You need to get from one to the other. You have airlines and terminals where they're overcrowded. You have airlines and terminals where they're like marbles rolling around a big, huge place. There's just a disconnect. And I think that, unfortunately, the final result for JFK and for LAX is it just needs to be wiped clean.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And what would be a good model? And I'm going to throw one out because once I had a 19-hour layover in Amsterdam.
Right.
Now, when you go to the airport in Amsterdam, you're not really in Amsterdam. It's about a 15, 20-minute train ride. It's a painless train ride, but they do drop you off in a train station that's a little chaotic. But just the same, you're not actually in Amsterdam. So you have to make a decision whether you're going to stay in the airport for 19 hours for that extremely long layover like I did, or go into the city all alone with your bags and get lost. Okay, fine.
Oh.
But for me, I decided to stay in the airport because the airport, what's it called? Schiphol?
Schiphol.
Schiphol? Okay, fine. Yeah. It's like an enormous city. It's like a shopping mall.
And fantastic.
There's so much to do there and to see, even at 3 in the morning. It's just spectacular.
Right. It's open 24 hours. There's tons of stuff to do. Good eating. And it's laid out very simply. You know, big, you know, wide concourses, great signage, and you hit on the key there, which is that it's linked to the rail. And before 9/11, when security got really tight, Schiphol was one of the few places where you could realistically go and have like a 6-hour layover, go out the door, get on the train in 15 minutes, you're across the tracks from the outer canal, go and have, you know, your French fries with mayonnaise or your Indonesian food, and then get back for your flight.
Go see Helen Keller House.
Yeah. Well, no, not Helen Keller.
No, who am I thinking of? Not Helen Keller, the other gal, the one who was hiding from the Nazis.
Right. Anne Frank House.
Helen Keller House.
That was one of the, you know, 15 minutes in was really amazing.
You know, the Kellers listen to this show, too, and they must be abhorred at my lack of historical knowledge.
Well, you do a lot of shows, Phil, and, you know, plus the baseball. And, you know, the hockey, you took a few pucks.
Yeah, I took a couple of pucks to the head. So, yeah. But I don't mean to make excuses. I hate excuses. Now, how about if you're flying to East Asia or some other places like that?
They've been really good about, you know, I mean, that's the biggest area of expansion for aviation. A lot of these Airbus 380s, these double-deckers that you see flying into LAX, you have to park out at the end of the terminal and then, you know, use these special little buses to bring people in. They're being built for those jets, or the airports are being modernized. Now, there's some really terrible airports, like Manila.
Yeah. Manila.
And some of the ones in, like, Tokyo, Narita, you know, very congested, but an airport like Kansai Airport, which is goes into Osaka, you know, sort of the Chicago of Japan, as it were. It's a man-made island, and you take a rail, bullet train out there, not bullet train, but it links up with the bullet train.
Yeah.
And you go out to this island, and again, the same thing. Very nicely laid out, lots of things to do, lots of places to eat, 24 hours a day. If you get stuck there, you're fine.
Is that one of those airports where when you're on approach on the plane in a giant jumbo jet, and you're looking down, you're saying, holy crap, the pilot's got to land on that little dot there in the middle of the water.
Yeah.
Or when you're taking off, you're saying, holy crap, we're not going fast enough to get enough thrust and lift to get off of this island. At the end, we're going to plow into the water.
Yeah, although LAX, you know, used to have that feeling, you know, when you used to take off and going over the sand dunes and then over the beach. I can remember during the fires, the big fires, I needed to take a helicopter for my newspaper up to San Fernando Valley, and we had to go down to 100 feet at the beach, wait for the jet to go over, and then streak across the sand before they could let the next jet go. So LAX has a little bit of that, but yeah, you know, Honolulu,
yeah.
San Francisco certainly, you know, where it's kind of like at dark, it's like, wait a minute, that's just the ocean, you know.
Right, right. And just a little tip from my wife, and she hasn't been there, but I think my daughter has, and she talked about the ladies' restrooms at the airport in South Korea. Not sure which one it is, but the ladies' restrooms in South Korea they have twittering bird sounds to drown out the offensive noises in the bathrooms.
Yes. That's a pretty standard thing in Japan and in Germany, where they try to green up the bathrooms with bird noises and all these other things, so that the usual noises that are in there,
yeah.
Plus they put sprays out and like that.
Yeah.
I think it's cute. The Japanese really try to hide. The Japanese, well, this is a whole other topic. The Japanese and toilet technology, man, they are just
way ahead of the curve.
I love when my journalist friends say whole nother. That's awesome. Yeah. Now, Gary, you have this is something that you'd like to promote to the audience. Tell us about that.
Oh, I just was going to say that I have an article on Carlsbad in northern San Diego County. And what I did is I said, I'm not going to write about Legoland. So it's, what can you do in Carlsbad without going to Legoland? You
know, Carlsbad, California, a little suburb of San Diego.
Right? There's no baths there or anything like that. You know, it's named after a Czech spa, but still they've got, you know, four or five great beaches.
Yeah.
They've got the Museum of Musical Instruments there, where you can actually, you know, check out a guitar and an amp and play it.
Now, where can we read your article, Gary?
It's in Orange Coast Magazine. It's the affiliate of Los Angeles Magazine, so a lot of newsstands carry both.
Good. Orange Coast Magazine, we'll look for it. If there's an online version, we'll link to it.
Yes, there is.
All right.
www.orangecoastmagazine.com.
Gotcha. Gary Warner, always a pleasure to speak with you. Safe travels to Portland.
I hope so. I'm going to Long Beach, so it'll be a lot easier than LAX.
Yeah.
Take care, guy.
All right. Take care. There you go. All right. Up next, the Minions attack and ruin the morning commute. We have that story next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. All right, I know you've been waiting to find out what your heaviest organ is.
Oh, yeah, I have been waiting.
It weighs 20 pounds.
I tell her anyway.
Yeah, your heaviest organ is your skin, buddy. No, take it easy. Calm down. It's your skin. Your skin is an organ. Your intestines are second heaviest at about 7.5 pounds. Your intestines, 7.5 pounds. Your second heaviest organ, okay? So skin, 20. Intestines, 7.5.
Intestines, is that before or after?
And your intestines are like a mile long.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Oh, before or after a steak and lobster dinner?
Right, in and out, Taco Bell.
Yeah, cheese.
Plus or minus Taco Bell on that. Okay.
Right, yeah. A woman in Saudi Arabia recently filed for divorce because her husband is, quote, very ugly. A judge tried to talk her into reconciling, but she stood by her decision. The odds are he's missed two of the first two court dates. The odds are he's stalling because women need a judge to grant them a divorce in Saudi Arabia. So as long as he keeps avoiding court, he can avoid the end of the marriage.
Hmm.
Which
how ugly is he?
Apparently, irresponsibly ugly.
I mean, if I may quote Match Game, how ugly was he? I mean, she probably has a case.
Yeah, do you remember the Match Game theme song?
Do I remember Match Game?
Something.
As a child growing up, I wanted to be Jane Rayburn.
Okay? Of course.
So
best game show host ever.
Ever. Exactly right.
Best anti-game show host. But see, that was a game show. For kids, if you don't remember, there was a time when game shows used to have celebrities on, and they would encourage them to basically get wasted before they went on the air.
So there was smoking and drinking. So they would come back from commercial break,
and
they'd be waving out smoke
because
they'd have to hide the cigarettes or cigars under the
desk. And sometimes not hide them.
Sometimes not,
because they'd had too much to drink.
Right. And they were all encouraged to be somewhat racy in their answers. Yeah.
And a Match Game was a game show based on questions asked of drunk celebrities.
Exactly.
And it was, and I'm not so sure that Gene Rayburn, the host of the show, wasn't a little schnockered.
No, they were all toasted.
Yeah, of course they were.
Absolutely. Yeah. Greatest, one of the greatest things that television has ever produced is the Match Game. Go it's all over YouTube. You can watch hours.
Yeah, you can. I think it holds up. So kids, go ahead and enjoy, but please enjoy responsibly. Because that's what we say now. This is, since we had all the fun when we were young, you're not allowed to anymore.
Right. Just be thankful you don't have to wear those suits.
We used up all the fun. You have to just sit at home and play video games. All right. Now, when you are schnockered and you go out and you go out on the town, the likelihood is that something enormous and inflatable and yellow might land on your highway.
Well, sure. Well, you know, here's what I was thinking. You know, when you're driving to work and you're caught in that incredible traffic jam nightmare, it's like worse than usual.
Yeah.
And you're like, what has happened and what caused this? And you finally get to the thing that caused the accident, and you're like, or, you know, whatever the accident was, and it's like there's a rock in the road, or it's like pointless, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the traffic starts going again, and you're like, what was that?
Yeah.
And you have, there's no closure. You know, you wanted to see a terrific fireball or a giant crater in the highway or something that would cause the traffic to make you be so late. If you're driving to work in Dublin, Ireland, I think on Monday, and you're driving along on the main freeway and you look up and there's a giant inflatable minion from the Minions movie.
Yeah.
Tipped over on his side, blocking three or four lanes of traffic. I mean, he's that big.
Yeah.
He's just laying there like, hi. I don't know what noises they make. I've never seen any of the movies.
Yeah.
I've only seen the commercials. But yeah, he's laying in the road is completely blocked by this giant inflatable minion. Let's see. One of the witnesses to this incredible tragedy, Aaron Von London, said, I'm not sure how it got loose. Yeah. I just saw it coming loose and flying across the road as we were driving. It's been very windy in the area. Of course, she lives in Ireland, and she's speaking with an English accent. That's just because of budgetary and lack of talent.
Yeah.
But is that picture on the fun page? Is that
I'm looking. Got, I'm, yes, right. There it is.
Is it there? Okay, yeah. So the giant minion in the street on the Phil Hewlett and Friends fun page.
Yeah.
Because, if you were to come across that in the morning, you would maybe just turn around and go home.
Yeah.
At least I would.
Yeah, that's some picture to behold. And it's right next to the ejector bed.
Oh, ejector bed's on there too?
On the show fun page. Yeah, there's video of the ejector bed. So you can see it in action. There's a 26-year-old woman in, since we're in Ireland, right? She's in Northern
Ireland. Right, as we could tell clearly from before. That
this lady's in Northern Ireland, and she's going blind. Do you know why?
No.
I mean, you got to have some sympathy for her. It's safe to say it was totally her fault, though. because the reason she lost her vision is that she spent the past several years drinking 28 cans of Red Bull a day.
Wow.
She gained a ton of weight. She got to be over 360 pounds, and she developed a rare condition where her brain swelled up and stopped her optic nerve from working right. It's called idiopathic intracranial hypertension, and it comes from drinking 28 cans of Red Bull a day.
Wow.
Her doctors say she can start to reverse the process, but she'll need to lose at least 30% of her girth, and even after that, she still might need surgery to keep her eyesight. On the bright side, since her vision started fading, she's completely stopped drinking Red Bull.
Hmm. As your parents used to say, don't do that, you'll go blind.
Exactly.
Right. So add that to the list of things not to do in order to keep your vision in a healthy condition.
Yeah. All right. Fine. And we're just about done with the program here, so I thought I would leave you with something heartwarming. Because we do get these stories every now and then, and it's one of these where you're going to say, oh, no kidding. A 13-year-old girl, her name is Sage. She lives in Cement, Oklahoma, or as I guess they say there, Cement. And she lost her dad, Johnny, to pancreatic cancer back in May. All right, fine. It's a sad story. About a month later, she and her mom went to visit her dad's grave on Father's Day. They released some balloons with a note asking whoever found them to get in touch. Which didn't go well at first because they got tangled up in some power lines, but a gust of wind eventually blew them away, and Sage watched them drift off into the sky. After that, she and her mom ran errands for a few hours, drove home, and that's when Sage noticed something in a field about a few hundred feet away from their house. It turns out the balloons had drifted 25 miles and landed in their backyard. So,
is that... I don't know if I'm supposed to say or is that the creepiest thing in the world ever?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that like, ee-wee?
Use that story any way you wish. Hey, we love your comments. Click on contact in the menu at philhewlettandfriends.com. We're on Twitter at Faf Show. We're on Facebook as well. Like us. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson. Our theme song is composed and performed by Russ Monson. For Gonzo, Greg, and all of the friends, I'm Phil. Can't wait to talk to you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.